Okay. I've never been there.
All right, well, these three stories.
Where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning, good morning, good morning. How are you? Hopefully everything is okay in your world. Hopefully your car's still running well. I don't know what else to say other than I hope your car's running well. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, you certainly can. We're talking about cars for the next 2 hours. To my right is my son, Alan. And he's the Mr. Vibration of the shop. And to my left is my grandson, Mark. And he's a... Where do you go to school at?
Tarwater Elementary.
Tarwater Elementary. Have you been in any trouble?
Not lately.
Not lately? Okay. Any trouble at all, ever?
Yes.
Okay. It comes with the last name.
Yep, it does.
It comes with the last name, buddy. It's just every once in a while, you just got to flirt with that line and step over.
Mm-hmm.
And your dad used to live by the motto, what was that? What was that motto? I know what it was. If you play by the rules, you miss all the fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'd prefer you not try that. But if you play by the rules, you miss all the fun. Speaking of fun, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto Repair. They've been a trusted name in automotive repair since 1967. They have all the stuff necessary to do the work, whether it's auto electrical, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance, engine replacement, engine repair. They can do anything you need. But what Bob's really, really good at, Bob is really, really good at diagnostics. So if you've got one of those problems nobody else can fix, then 38th Avenue and Indian School is where Larry Harker's is at. I'd suggest you call, make an appointment, and then stop by because he's a good guy, and he's probably one of the best technicians I've ever met in my life. He just has that fundamental knowledge about car repair. All righty. We had a guy a couple of weeks ago that called up and said that he had a Q45 and... he had a vibration, and he had taken it to a drive shaft place, and they had done work on the drive shaft, and he drove it, and that didn't change the work. It changed the vibration. So then what happened after that is he took it to another shop or drive shaft shop, and they did some work on it, and it didn't change the vibration. So I said to him, so we started and ended with the same vibration, and he said yes. And I said, I'm betting that that's not the drive shaft, because after we put a center support on it, after we do U-joints on it, after we do that kind of stuff, then it's typically not going to be those issues. I said to him that if you'd bring it by the shop, that you would drive it, not on Monday or Friday mornings for obvious reasons, but we'd look at it for him for nothing. I wouldn't fix it for him, and I wouldn't go into detailed diagnostics for nothing. So tell me what you remember about this Q45 coming in.
Well, a lot, actually. I remember driving it and obviously duplicating the vibration. I do remember that we had looked up to see, and evidently there has been a drive shaft issue on this vehicle. So we were able to locate a drive shaft in the event that it needed a drive shaft.
Which is something he said he couldn't do.
Right, yeah. He said that they were discontinued, but we found a company that makes them, and evidently it's a fairly common problem. And I remember, test driving it and understanding. And then...
The vibration, front, steering wheel, seat to your pants, right side,
kind of all
side.
Over, to be honest with you. It wasn't a defined steering wheel issue, which is usually indicative of the front end, but it was kind of an all-over car vibration.
Okay.
Pretty bad.
All right. You could feel it in the seat of your pants more predominantly than the steering wheel.
Yes.
Okay. So that kind of puts it at the back of the car.
Typically, yes.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
So we raised it up, and we put the car into drive and spun the rear and just kind of took a look and looked at the drive shaft and looked at the tires and the wheels and everything to see if we could notice. We noticed that the right rear was... moving not only side to side but up and down a lot, right rear tire
Okay. So all the rest of them were spinning like a record on a record player, nice and smooth and no wobble.
Yeah, well, the fronts weren't spin at all. Obviously, it's rear-wheel drive. But yes, as we spun the fronts by hand, we didn't notice anything.
Okay. But this one looks like a record that has been in the heat.
Yes.
And you put it on a record player and you turn it on and it just moves and moves and moves.
Yep.
All right. So at that particular point, what'd you do, replace the tire and wheel?
No. So we need to figure out if it's the tire and wheel or something beyond the tire and wheel.
Okay.
So we just swapped it from side to side.
Took the left rear off, the driver's side
rear off?
Yeah,
because the left rear looked good on the car.
All right.
So we didn't see any issues at all in the left rear.
So no side-to-side lateral movement, we call it.
No
lateral
and down.
Movement or anything.
No, nothing.
Down.
Nope.
All right, so you take the one tire off the left side, put it on the right side, put the right on the left side, and what happens?
Exactly the same. It stayed in the right side.
So it wasn't a tire and wheel.
Was not. That gets rid of the tire and wheel as an option.
Okay. So then at that point, you diagnosed it as?
Well, at that point, we start doing a little bit more digging. We're looking at the rotors. We're looking at, all kinds of stuff. And we ended up coming to the conclusion it was a bent, a hub plate, hub assembly.
Whole hub. Yeah.
Hub assembly, yeah. So.
Okay. Now, during this process, Eddie, which was also in contact with the customer, there was some discussions about who did a lot of this work.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was kind of fuzzy.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, and that's okay, because a lot of people, they don't pay attention to the specifics. We don't want the address or whatever. But that rear hub is bad for one of three reasons. Number one, somebody kissed a curb with the right rear.
Yeah.
Bent the hub.
Yeah, and usually that would cause a. Usually at that point the wheel would go first.
Okay.
And there was no damage to the wheel or the tire or any of the other ones on the car.
Okay. That's not to say that the tire and wheel were bad. Somebody put another tire and wheel on
it
after they kissed the curb on the right.
Right.
All right. The second thing would be just wear and tear. And the third thing would be that whoever pressed bearings or messed with that hub last, and it's my understanding that someone had just worked on that right rear hub.
Mm-hmm. Done rear axle bearings.
Okay. So when you're pressing the bearings on and off, I don't know where that hub is and that's in that thing, but I would bet that whoever did the bearings bent the hub. And they probably had it in a hydraulic press.
Yep.
And they probably got it in there crooked.
Yep.
And they bent the hub when they did that.
Yep.
Because he said it happened after I had some bearings repaired on the right rear.
Right.
So it's unfortunate because we don't know if it was the guy next door, if it was the neighborhood mechanic, if it was his brother-in-law's shop, if it was a dealership, if it was an independent store, or if it was him. We really don't know.
Mm-mm.
And evidently he didn't care. How much was the hub, do you remember?
It was a lot. I want
1200, I'm thinking.
Well, that was the whole job. I think the hub was around 700 or 800.
Okay. So R&R, remove and reinstall the hub plus the hub and all that kind of stuff was almost $1200.
Mm-hmm.
So he decided no, he'll take the car.
Right.
And probably if he's smart and he really did have a shop do that work, then he takes it back to the shop and he said, you gave me something I didn't have when I came in.
Right.
So I didn't come in with a vibration. I came in with a noise.
Mm-hmm.
You replaced bearings, axle bearings, whatever. And as a result of that, the noise is gone. But now I have this terrible vibration in the back of the car.
Right.
So it's that stereotypical, you gave me something I didn't have.
Right.
So that was good. So he knows what to do with it. He knows how to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
A good diagnosis.
Good diagnosis.
Yeah, good, good, good. Okay. So it and I've got actually the work order right here, and I don't know where it's. Oh, yeah, $1,204, which is right rear hub and bearing. Infinity has a service bulletin on this hub that requires the bearing to be replaced with the hub, and that's probably where the problem got ugly.
Yes.
Is they tried to replace the bearing in the hub when in reality you have to buy them together.
Correct, yep.
And that creates problems with respect to car repairs in general, car repair shops in general, because one guy bids the right rear for $1,204, and somebody else goes, well, that bearing's only $85, and the labor's only 3 hours, and so I'm half as much as he is.
Right.
And he's, trying to rip you off, but in reality, the technical stuff says you replace both of them together.
Infinity says you need to replace both of them together. Okay. So clearly this isn't the first time this has happened.
Right. Now, folks, when you write a work order, when your shop writes a work order, let me tell you what needs to be on the work order, or you should insist is on the work order. First of all, they've documented the customer's concern. So I'm reading the work order now. It says check vibration at 80 miles an hour. High frequency vibration. You guys can have it for a couple of days. So then the technician writes this. Check vibration at 70 plus. Can feel it in the steering wheel. Customer thinks it may have started after rear axle bearings were replaced elsewhere. Had the balance checked. Found no issues per customer. We inspect the vehicle. We are able to duplicate the issue. Did you guys go 80 miles an hour to duplicate it?
I didn't.
Oh, okay.
Eddie was driving.
Were you in the car?
I don't recall.
Okay, all right, good.
I had my eyes closed. I couldn't see the speedo.
I'm not the police. You don't need to do that. We found the issue coming from the passenger right rear. We removed the tire and wheel and see if it was bent. It wasn't. We swapped the passenger rear wheel and tire, and we could see clearly that we're moving. We found the right rear hub flange is bent. We recommend replacing the rear hub and bearing. And again, Infinity has a service bulletin. You do them both. So estimate to replace the right hub with the bearing is $1,204. The parts are special order, 5 to 7 days. We would ask you to pay them in advance. And the customer declined it at this particular time. He also has a situation where there's a problem with the engine or something like that. He asked for a general checkover, and we found a hose clamp loose on the intake for the MAP sensor. We tightened that up, that clamp. That's an important consideration.
Mm-hmm.
We have to measure every square inch, every iota of air going into the motor to appropriately give you power, performance, fuel economy, and emissions.
Match it with the correct amount of fuel.
Right.
Right.
Thank you. So if we have two sources of air, we have a leak over here, and we have the mass airflow sensor over here, then we have what we call unmetered air going into the engine. And so when you have unmetered air, the computer doesn't see that. It's not measured because it's coming in the back door,
behind,
so to speak.
Yeah, behind it. It really doesn't apply to in front of it other than you're getting dirty, nasty air that's not going through an air filter. What we're talking about is air behind the mass airflow sensor that can't be measured.
PCV valve? Vacuum lines coming off of the intake manifold, vacuum lines that go to the dashboard for the AC and climate controls. I mean, you got a brake booster, and the brake booster, when it goes bad and it's allowing you to drain the vacuum, then you hit the brakes and all of a sudden the motor starts running bad. Those kinds of vacuum problems are going to cause that same thing, but you're right. It's right behind the in this particular case, yeah. It was right behind the mass airflow sensor, so if the air's coming in behind it, the mass airflow sensor can't measure it.
And real quick, 95% of the leaks that we find are in the intake system, in the piping from the engine to the air filter, because people, they clean the air filter and they forget to tighten one up. Sometimes there's six clamps.
All righty. 602-508-0960. If you have a question or you have a problem, you're more than welcome. When we come back, we're going to talk to, well, we're not going to talk to him, but I got a letter from a guy that owns a 2014 Corvette. And his underwear is pretty wadded up. And so we thought we'd just cover that so that you would know what to do and under the circumstances he was in. So we'll be right back right after this.
The mechanic raised up from under my
hood. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour, 9 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. And we're here talking about cars. And if you'd like to join us, we have Jim on the line. We're going to get to him in just a minute. But we also have four other lines, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been in the Valley, been in the Phoenix area since 1968. Phil and Trey and Paul are transmission diagnostic experts. They do all kinds of transmission work, from very small repairs to complete overhauls. And they also have a dynamometer where they can put your transmission on this machine and run it through its paces. Why does that mean any difference to you? Here's why. It's because if they put it in the car and drive it and find out that something's wrong, they have to take it back out. So you're not going to get your car back for a couple days because it's got to come back out and be fixed. So when they put it on the dyno and check it, if there's a problem or if there's a leak, they'll fix it right there. Saves a lot of time for you. So Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington, the north side of the road. Been there since 1968. Jim, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 2012 Ford F-150 3.5 EcoBoost engine. problem I had last weekend was towing our travel trailer. It was about 7,500 pounds. When you go on the inclines, grades, the temperature gauge would spike all the way to the hot, and then I'd get the warning lights saying the engine's overheating. So to bring the temperature down, we'd have to turn the heat on and put that on full blast, and it would go down to about 3/4. And then once you get through the incline, the temperature would go back down to normal, and I could turn the AC back on. But once you hit the incline, the temperature gauge spikes up.
Okay. Just real quick, how much does the trailer weigh?
7,500.
7,500?
Yeah.
Is that within the towing capability, that 150?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
10.5 is the towing max.
10.5.
Yeah, EcoBoost, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I thought it was actually higher than that.
What's your truck?
It's $2.5 million.
Oh.
To answer your question, this is... How many miles are on this EcoBoost?
90,000.
Yeah. I can't tell you exactly what takes care of the issue, but I know that this is a known issue on the EcoBoost. I've seen this numerous times, not in the shop, but from customers who have dealt with this and taken it back to the dealer for whatever reason. It had been under warranty.
I did take it back, and they said nothing's wrong with it.
Well, exactly where is the gauge? Does it touch the red, or is it between 3/4 and the red?
It touches the red. Once it touches the red, the warning light comes on and says engine's overheating.
Okay. Well, can't you downshift one? I mean, how fast are you towing this up to Flagstaff? When you hit some of those lights, what are you trying to do?
At the most, I go at 65, but when I do the hills, I do 55, but I had to bring the speed down to about 40 to 45.
Okay. And you know, if we were to turn that question around, let me ask you, Alan, 7,500 trailer on an F-150 with an EcoBoost, all right? You're going to Payson. You're going up Rye Hill, okay? Is it unreasonable for this EcoBoost to haul that 7,500-pound trailer up that hill at 60 miles an hour?
If it were any other truck, I'd probably – if it was a Chevy half ton, I'd say no.
Okay.
But the EcoBoost, I would say – No, I'm sorry. I would say yes. It's unreasonable to ask that.
Okay.
But that EcoBoost, that's what they're designed to do. That's why they have a higher towing capacity than all the other half tons.
That might be fine, 60 miles an hour. I see 3/4 tons coming out of Rye that are all 45 because I pass them. I honk when I pass them, too.
But they're carrying 12,000 pounds.
They can be two axle trailers. Yeah, I'm not talking about the three axles. Those guys that are weighing 10 and 12, 5.
Did this just start, or is this something you've been battling for a while?
No. I had this truck. This is brand new. I always took the same trailer up to Flagstaff and never had the problem. Never.
All right. Well, if you're only having the problem at higher speeds and you don't have any problem around the city, the only difference between the two of them is the fan clutch.
It's the incline, and I have electric fans on them.
Okay. All right, so you've eliminated everything.
Yeah.
You know, you've eliminated everything. I mean, we're done guessing because, you know, every time we say something, I think if you just back off the throttle a little bit, I would be interested in where we make power there if we're going to be okay. I would want you to drop from 60 to 45 and see if we can keep it near the 3/4 mark, because 3/4 doesn't bother me when you got a 7,500-pound trailer on it. But the issue really is why didn't it do it before? And the only other thing is if he's got electric fans on it, then if the radiator's somewhat plugged up after 100,000 miles, then the hotter water's going to come in, but it's going to go through the radiator so fast it doesn't cool off. It's like a train station. The coolant isn't dropping its coolant off in the radiator because it's moving through the radiator so fast because, you know, 25% of it's plugged or 30% of it's plugged.
You know, I'm wondering, too, if there's some sort of a software update for that as well. We do a lot of updating on the EcoBoost.
Okay. What you might do is if you want to go to YouTube and Google, you can Google your EcoBoost and up, you know, overheat and then plus software update or reflash. Those are the big words.
Yeah, or if you had time to swing by, what we can do is we can pull your current calibrations and see what the newest, you know, see how far you are out of date. If you're 19 out of date, I'd say we need to start there for sure.
And that's going to cost him between $128 and all the way up to about $175, just depending on how long that car sits on the cloud.
Yeah, Yeah. Yeah, okay. Exactly. 129, 170 to 179.
Okay. What happens is we're going to talk to the cloud, and we're going to plug your car in, and we're going to talk to the cloud. Well, it costs money to get to the cloud. And so then the cloud looks at it and says, oh, I recognize that car. Then the cloud says, hey, well, I've got a transmission update. I've got an ABS mm-hmm. update. I've got a cooling system update. I've got a timing update. Which ones do you want? Now, sometimes there's a risk by saying, give me all of them.
Sure.
Because we end up with a problem we didn't have before. So some guys, and that's when the customer gets to pick. Here's the menu. What do you want?
Well, yeah, and it's when you end up with problems like that. So basically, they see that they're having this issue, so they derate the power.
Okay.
So they drop the power down across the thing. So all of a sudden they say,
2 minutes.
Wait a minute. I don't have as much power as I have to. Well, what do you want? You want overheating or you want less power?
Right. Right.
So that's the kind of stuff. When he says problems, sometimes, you know, the manufacturers fix this too well. We'll just back the power down a little bit and see what happens.
And that's not uncommon at all. Mm-mm. Because they can't possibly predict on all the different circumstances.
Scenarios,
with respect to how people are going to use their cars.
Right.
I'm still of the opinion that 45 is a good speed. And take it out of overdrive.
Sure.
And either put it in fifth or fourth.
RPMs, yeah.
And bring the RPMs up a little bit because, and I wonder what his EGTs are when he's running, flirting with the red.
Well, that's only diesel.
Okay.
So,
but he's still going to have an increase in exhaust temperature.
Oh, sure.
So, anyway, all right, well, good luck to you. Good luck to you, Jim.
Thank you.
You bet. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. When we come back, we're going to tell you the Corvette story, because we didn't get it in that segment. The Corvette story starts off, I bought this 2014 Corvette in a private sale.
1 minute.
In November of 14. I'm the second owner. After a few months, the dash lights would dim for no reason. So I took it to the dealer. They said the problem was a known problem with GM, and it would be fixed by a software update. So I had it done. Then in early 2016, it happened again, and the dealer fixed it again. November 16th, I had the same problem, and the dealer said, and so we're going to cover that on the other side of the break. There is a happy ending to this, but what's really important is the lesson we learn. Now, I was involved in this in the early side, and I made this suggestion. His butt was on fire. Because he was really unhappy with the circumstances. And I said, this is what you need to do to get past this. And he did exactly what I suggested, and he accomplished his goal. But he's still madder than heck. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Let me finish the story. So the guy has a 2014 Corvette. He's the second owner. He buys it from a private party. He has dash lights that would dim for no reason. He takes it in. The dealership said, oh, we know about that. And they fixed it with a software update. Then it happened again, and they fixed it with a software update. Then it happened again. He takes it in, and the dealer says, it's out of warranty, and we can't help you. Then he said by the dealership, now this is probably a service writer or something like this. I'm sure this didn't come from the guy whose name's on the billing. He says, had you bought it from us, we could have cut you some leeway or slack. Now folks, that is something you're very likely to hear. So you can tell that when he heard this, that didn't set well with him. This is a 7, and then he goes, when I returned to the dealer, he said, anyway, he was really mad when he left. So he calls me up, and I say to him, here's what happened. General Motors and a lot of the rest of them, they gutted everything between the manufacturer and the dealer. So they had all these multiple level of people that were trying to make decisions, good for GM and good for the dealerships. So they just took all those people and threw them away and said, here's the money, dealer, make people happy. And it's really turned out pretty good, I'm told. So anyway, I said to him, I want you to call 1-800-GM and get a case number. Just say, I could make a complaint. Be nice, polite, firm. But give him the specifics, dates and times. And he says, fine. So he went in there and he says, I've had it done 3 times, and it hasn't really fixed the problem. It's reoccurred. I took it in the 4th time, and they said, because I didn't buy it from them, that they weren't going to fix it. So, upon your advice, I called General Motors directly. And they were helpful, and they told me to return to the dealer. They would call the dealer and set it up for them to fix it. When I returned to the dealer, they did fix it, and they said, quote, we hope you understand we couldn't do anything for you unless it came from Chevrolet directly. Now, this is the customer talk. It's, no, I don't understand how you could have blah, 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 to tell me you wouldn't fix a known problem on a $75,000 car and made me jump through hoops just to get it done because I didn't buy the car from you. Good luck with that attitude. I will make sure my friends and business partners hear about this. So you can tell that he's pretty fired up. Mm-hmm. It's something that happens a lot. Mm-hmm. And there is that perception from them that if you buy your car from us, we're going to give you extra good treatment. The problem with this whole story is that he already had money to fix this. All this money's filtered down to the dealer. You take care of it. Instead of having a fleet guy and then having a sales manager and having an area manager and all that other manager, all those people are gone, and General Motors just says, here, fix this. Another thing is that all the dealers, how important is CSI to these guys?
I was just thinking the same thing.
When you fill out a card at the end of your time.
That is not important. That is the most important.
If you beat him up, if you beat him up on that CSI card after you pick up
customer
your car,
service, what is CSI?
Information or
customer service inquiry or something?
I don't know what CSI.
It's called the survey. When you buy a new car, maybe even a used car, it's GM's survey on how the dealership did. That is the most powerful voice that you have by far, and they make lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of money, the majority of the money on that survey.
Well, not only that, is when you, there's people that are paid on CSI,
mm-hmm.
and if the level drops below this, they lose money.
Yep.
Then there's service riders that have everything to do with CSI. Here's what I promise you. When you take a card and you're unhappy, and you should never fill the card out for about 4 or 5 days.
Or longer.
So you fill it out, and if you, nice, firm, polite, keep in mind those, but you beat them up nicely, firmly, and politely, mm-hmm. You're going to get a call within or 3 days.
And let me tell you something else, too. I'm not going to finish this story because you guys can come to your own conclusions, but when they tell you, hey, bring this survey back to us and we'll give you a free oil change, what do you think's happened to that survey if it's a bad survey? Yeah, okay. That's why they entice you with a free oil change. They want to see that survey.
And they don't want any bad service, and rightfully so, we don't either.
No. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. But we don't go as far as they do.
They're just not being nice with their free oil change.
1 minute.
I promise you that.
No, you're right. Cusser, what's up?
Okay, I did email you last Saturday. I didn't get a response, so I'm going to just do it by phone. Okay. Here's my question, and then I'll get into the details.
Cusser, just get to the question, buddy.
My question is, should I mess with an air conditioning system that's cooling very well right now?
No. If it's 55 or less out of the center vent and you're driving down the street or the highway, you're fine. 55 degrees less. Go buy one of those $2 thermometers at one of the auto parts stores. Stick it in your center vent. Go on maximum. I would go in speed 3. I wouldn't go in speed 4. Drive down the road. If it's 55 or less, you're wasting your time. I don't know what kind of car you have, but I can tell you this much. There are cars out there that will blow ice cubes at you. We've got cars that have left our shop at 38 and 40 and 45 degrees. That's not normal in any way, shape, or form. So depending on the year, make, and model of your car, the older then not so close to that 45 degrees are you going to get. But the newer, especially the smaller cars, like the Hondas and the Toyotas, them things will really throw ice cubes out the vent at you. So
yeah,
they get pretty cold.
We have people at the counter all the time say, my AC is blowing cold, but I just want to check up. If your AC is blowing, I wouldn't touch it. I would leave it alone and don't mess with it.
If you're happy with it, now keep in mind there's two different settings. There's normal and maximum. When we come back, we'll talk about normal and maximum. But normal is swamp cooler. And maximum is like the AC in your house. And those of you that are from Arizona know exactly what I'm talking about. For those of you that are not from Arizona, we'll explain it to you when we come back.
Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I want to change my vehicles from conventional motor oil over to full synthetic. And I have three basic questions if you could just help me with.
Sure.
My first question is, if I do that, should I still change the filter at 3,000 or 4,000?
Okay.
And then the second question is, I've been told by friends that when you go to full synthetic, the synthetic oil actually gets in between tighter tolerance parts. And then my third question is, somebody has told me that when they change from conventional to full synthetic, their engine started to use oil. And I'm just wondering, is that normal or possible?
Okay, let's start with the first one. It's important to understand the difference between conventional, semi-synthetic, and synthetic. It has to do with oil change intervals. So conventional is 3 to 5,000 miles. Semi-synthetic is 5 to 7,500, which is draws the middle. And then synthetic is 7,500 all the way up to 12,000.
Okay.
So, yes, you can do that. And no, you don't need to do the filter. I know there's lots of people out there that are going to tell you their filter's better for this, and we wrap a magnet around the case and all that crap. None of it's true. Let me explain. Do you know, do you know what a micron is?
Yes.
1/1,000,000th of a meter, am I right?
Yeah.
Do you have any idea how thick a piece of human hair is with respect to microns?
Hair is like a few thousandths of an inch, I think.
Right. It is 2,000ths of an inch. With a micron, it's like 4 to 5 microns, so 4 to 5 millionths of an inch.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact of the matter is anything floating through your filter that's less than 20 micron, the motor doesn't care.
Okay.
So at 20, we kind of filter at 20. What was the second question?
Does the synthetic oil get into tighter tolerance areas? And then the third one was, do engines start using oil
okay.
if you go to full synthetic?
If you're going to stay with the same weight, the answer is no. So if you're using a 0/20 conventional or semi-synthetic and you go to a 0/20 synthetic, the answer is one's not going to get into the tighter tolerance. Besides that, the question then becomes, if the oil doesn't get to tighter tolerances, what kind of problems am I going to look at the future? And my answer is I've never seen a dollar spent on anything that has to do with the oil not getting to tighter tolerances than the rest.
Now, excuse me. Are you keeping the same weight?
Yeah, I would just use the same weight that the manufacturer of the car tells us to use.
So the answer is no.
Yeah, and the idea is that I don't know what tighter tolerances mean. I don't know of any other tolerances other than rod bearings and cam bearings.
Right. I think if you went from a 1030 to a 0/20, would you agree that may be such a thinner oil that you may get into quote unquote tighter tolerances?
We're still talking about 3,000ths of an inch, and both of them will get there.
I understand.
Okay, both of them will get there,
but using the same stuff is
right.
Going to be.
There's no problem. And the last one is oil consumption. If your motor's not using oil now, it won't then. And there's another wife's tale. When you put it in, it'll start leaking like crazy and consuming like crazy. None of those are true. And one of them says, well, it's going to cause the seals to leak. That's not true. And then last question is Mark, you say, hey, Mark Salem, what do you put in your truck? I put a 0/40 synthetic. Alan, what do you put in your truck?
No, 5/40 synthetic.
5/40, I'm sorry.
Same thing.
All right.
I run the same thing.
Same thing.
Yeah.
And what are we running in Mom's car and Andy's car and our shop vehicles and all that
520
stuff?
520 synthetic.
Okay. So we're talking the same language. I'm not doing something and telling you, I'm not doing this and telling you to do something different. But if you want to swap over, forget the filter idea. And I would probably go somewhere in the 10,000. And let me ask you this. How many miles a year do you drive?
About 12,000.
Boom. That's it. I tell you what I would do. I'd change the oil every May or April or May, and I'd go a whole year, and I'd forget about it.
Okay.
That's exactly how I would handle it. Okay?
Okay. Thank you so much.
You betcha.
Now, real quick, with respect to leaks, if you had a higher mileage engine, you could, by going to a thinner oil, you could create an oil leak.
Okay. But technically, you're wrong.
Okay.
Because the perception is a 10 weight is water. And a 40 weight is peanut butter.
Right.
That's not the case at all. Oil doesn't get thicker. This is the thing. It flows like a 10 weight
right.
when it's cold
right.
and flows like a 40 weight when it's hot. So flows like is the key word. So an oil doesn't change viscosity. Everybody knows that when you drain the oil, it's like water. Well, that's just the opposite of 40 weight. So when you drain a 0/20 and it comes out, it's thin, even if you do it when it's cold. So if it were the other way around, then it would make sense. But no, that's still a wives' tale that came from the 70s when synthetic first came out. Air Park Auto is up in Scottsdale. They've been around since 1985. They're located at Raintree, just east of Hayden. Nadine owns Air Park Auto. Her husband, Stacy, passed away a couple years ago, and she's the only shop in North Scottsdale that I hang my hat with because she knows the difference between right and wrong. If you're a lady and you want to deal with a company that's run by a lady, I would strongly suggest you have an oil change done at Air Park Auto and see how you like them. That's the easiest way to get to know somebody. They have a state-of-the-art clean and green facility. They have the latest diagnostic tools. So North Scottsdale area, Raintree, which is just south of Frank Lloyd Wright, east of Hayden. It's called Air Park Auto Service. Let's go back to the phones. I got to turn my page here. Bill, you're next. How can I help you?
Yes, sir, Mark. I have a problem with the refrigeration on my 02 GMC Duramax diesel.
Okay.
It'll run your butt out of there. If it's just driving around town, you can't. I got to turn it down to 2 or 3. I get out on the highway, I run for, you know, a half hour, hour, and all of a sudden it's blowing real slow and not very cold. I've run into this several times.
Okay. Alan knows what it is.
You're freezing the condenser.
The evaporator.
I'm sorry. Yes, thank you. Freezing up the evaporator.
Behind the glove box is the little radiator that you have an air a fan behind.
Uh-huh.
And at the same time, I wonder how often you park the truck and come back 5-10 minutes later and there's a big puddle of water underneath the truck.
Well, yeah, I know. I've done this.
Okay.
I know.
That's what...
It'll fall out, and okay. I'm going, but how do I keep it from happening?
Well, here's what you do. You can't run it on 1 or 2. You either run it on normal 1 or 2, but you can't run it on maximum because that's recirculatory. So what you're doing is you're freezing that evaporator, you're turning it into ice cube, and then the air volume is substantially because now that it's an ice cube, we can't blow through the fins. The other thing you can do is drop the windows down a little bit, go to normal, and kick your fan speed up just a little bit to 3 or 4. Let's control the temperature with the windows as opposed to you running it in number 1 and number 2. Let me also tell you that if you're freezing up the evaporator, your air conditioning is working perfectly because that is the height of perfect. So
I'll tell you another thing. We fixed one.
Instead of turning it all the way over to blue, I should back off a little bit or what?
If you're Blue Max, you can come back just a little bit and warm the air slightly. Yes, you could. But you have a normal setting and a maximum setting or a recirculatory setting.
Right.
If you went to normal and dropped the windows down an inch on each side, that would help you keep the evaporator from freezing. Because it's like a swamp cooler. Well,
I don't have anything that says normal, but I have dials on there that shows the air recirculating inside or from outside.
Okay, well, I'm talking about outside air.
Okay.
We're going to bring air from the grill in front of the window, in front of the windshield. We're going to bring air in. We're going to cool it off, and we're going to shove it into a truck. In order for the air to get out, we got to drop the windows down an inch or so. So okay. Do you remember ever swamp coolers?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. When you're in normal, when you roll up all the windows, then it's the same thing as having your house with all the windows closed and having a swamp cooler. Nothing happens. So if you drop the window, we're going to move air through the cab of the truck. If you take my son on a ride and he stinks, then you drop his window down, you go to normal, and all of his smell goes out the passenger side window. Likewise, if somebody was smoking in your truck, you could get that cigarette smoke out the passenger side. So you're freezing up the evaporator. You got to kick up the speed. Maybe you turn off the blue just a little bit, maybe an eighth of an inch or quarter of an inch. And bring the fan speed up to 3 and drop your windows down just a tad, and that should help you keep the defrost from or the evaporator from freezing.
Now, the other thing, too, is we ran into this the other day with a real good customer of mine with the Chevy pickup, and it ended up having a bad cycling switch as well.
Okay.
Just...
And that's easy to check. We can put a set of gauges on it, and we watch that low side. And when we see the low side go down too far, it should cycle on and off.
Right.
And so if the low pressure switch is bad, you will freeze up your evaporator. But if you do what we said, you'll help us diagnose it. And if you say what you said was fine and it solved my problem, then there is no repair. Okay? So you're going to save yourself a heck of a lot of money if you just do what we said to determine if whether we said it gave you and it worked. All right, Joe or Bill, thank you very much. Joe, you're up. How can I help you?
Chemical problem here with a. I'd like to say kudos to Andy for turning me on to your snake oil gasket repair. it's phenomenal. Anyway. Chrysler 2001 2.7 V6. The overheating problem has stopped miraculously. The check engine light went off. Everything straightened itself out. Now what my problem is the check battery light is coming on after 1 or 2 minutes of running the car, but the battery has got 13 and a half in it all the time. The little woman told me that the transmission was acting somewhat funny coming home before all this happened. That's just about all I got, but it's a 2.7 Chrysler Sebring V6.
Okay. Well, the first thing that you have to do is you have to have somebody check the electrical system, which is typically $35 to $50.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot take your alternator off and have the three-whiskered kid fix it at the on the counter because you test things where they live. So you don't take the starter or the alternator or the battery out of your car and go have him test it. An electrical analysis, we're going to see what kind of output the alternator has. And I'll tell you right now, if you check your battery with the key in your pocket, let's pretend that it's 12.8, okay? When you start it up and bring the idle up a little bit, the battery should move about 1 volt north of that. So if you start at 12.8, it should be at 13.8. That's a very simple way to make sure that the alternator is absolutely working. But there's three diodes, and we can look at the pattern on our television screen to see if it's a bunch of M's or if it looks like a tornado with spikes high and low. That means the diode trio is out of it. We can also look at a variety of other things. We can test your battery in the car. We can test your cables to see how good they are. We've got a lot of different things that we can do. And for $30 to $50, as opposed to take all those parts off your car or go have him test it, because he's not going to have the equipment that independent shops do, or dealers for that matter as well. So you just have to deal with it. Tell me real quick about the gasket thing.
You were talking about the Mercedes for 3 years, hadn't had any problems.
Okay, head gasket.
Yeah, the head gasket. I used your Ultra without saying a name. I don't know if you want me to do that or not.
You can.
That K-Seal Ultra? My goodness.
Save it 2 minutes.
I, by flushing the system, made the problem even worse, and it blew the top off the inlet on the top of the engine.
Yeah.
And looking down in the two ports, I believe going to number two coil was always showing up on the diagnostic as being faulty. I replaced it, it made no difference, but you could see definite exhaust fumes in,
okay,
in the back section, and it blew the epoxy top right off that unit.
Okay, folks, what he's talking about is he had a combustion leak, a blown head gasket, so to speak. So at one time or another, it got kind of hot. The head gasket failed. The repair would have been between $2,500 and $4,000 on a V6. Just depends on the damage inside. We found a sealer that's never worked as good as, I mean, of all the sealers we've tried, every one of them has failed. So we finally found this one that absolutely works perfectly. It saves people an extensive amount of money. And we've got a, what has he got, Lexus? Got a Lexus Eddie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's got a Lexus that's going on 3 years, maybe 4 years, and we treated it 3 or 4 years ago, and it's still on the road. And he drives 55 miles each way to work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really good option, but you have to follow the directions. And for those of you that are not good at following directions, it isn't going to work for you. So for us, it's 125 plus 50. I think it's 175, and we handle everything. So that's the sealer plus the labor to do it right. But you can do it as long as you follow the directions. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Kurt's Auto Repair is up on I-17 and Bell. He's a good guy. He's always been a good guy, and he can fix just about anything. And he's also a Better Business Bureau Ethic Award winner. So if you live anywhere near I-17 and Bell and you don't have a garage, may I suggest that Kurt's Automotive, northeast corner of Bell and I-17, is a great place to go.
Talk to Mark. Call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, we're going to go to the phones real quick. Let me just take care of some business. S&S Tire services the West Valley. They have three locations in the West Valley, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They have a comprehensive line of tires and different brands of each tire, each size. So they're going to have anything that you want. What's really nice is that you can give them, they'll take the size off the sticker of your car or off the tires that you have. And then you say to them, I'd like good, better, or best. And they'll give you three prices, out-the-door prices, for four tires, mounted and balanced, all the FET, all the sales tax, all that jazz. And then you can decide what's best for you. Maybe you're going to sell the car, so you want the good ones. Maybe it's your wife's car and she just drives around town and never gets on the freeway, so you get the better. And then maybe your wife drives long distances, so you want the best. That's what it's all about. But S&S has everything between wheelbarrow tires and tractor tires and everything in between. And they do all the stuff that's related to tires, like alignment, suspension work, stuff like that. So if you're looking for new tires, can I suggest, if you're on the west side, stop by S&S for a quote. Evelyn, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. I'm just so thrilled to talk to you.
Oh, well, thank you for that.
I've been listening to you for the last three stations. I don't know how many years that goes. I just need to ask you some questions.
Sure.
Things that are bothering me. I had my transmission redone at Adolph almost a year ago.
Okay.
And I want to take it in. Again, is he still working?
His son is.
Adolph, pardon me?
Adolph kind of has retired, but his son is running the business.
He is
and
doing it still.
Adolph stops by to pick up his check and to cause trouble, just like all of us dads do. But it's the same organization. And I think what you would say, Evelyn, is you just say, I'd like to bring it in and have you just look it over to make sure everything is still okay, because you overhauled it a year ago.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Then another problem, I was sending my car to somewhere at 40th and Bell.
Okay.
Yeah, I live near 32nd and Greenway.
Okay.
You know, near the 51.
Right.
And I got a little annoyed with them partly over the transmission. So I went, and we started going to Kelly Clark, and we just got a letter the other day that they're changing.
Yes, yes, Kelly. Kelly is in his 80s. And he's retired, and another chain facility came in and bought his business, and he accepted their offer. So Kelly still has a 12th and Glendale store.
Right.
And
kind of far away. Is Kurt a little closer to me, maybe?
Yeah, he's I-17 and Bell, and then there's Action Auto, who is at I-17 and Deer Valley. So if you're close to Bell, Greenway's a mile south, right?
I'm near 32nd and the 51.
Okay. All right. In your case, probably Kurtz would be the closest facility. Or if you went over to Nadine at Air Park Auto, she's about 88th Street.
Uh-huh.
In Scottsdale, it's pretty close to Hayden is 80th Street and Pima is 88th Street, and she's right in the middle.
I think I can. What's her name of her? I listened to it, but what is it?
It's okay. It's Air Park Auto. Air Park Auto in Scottsdale.
Okay, right. Have to excuse me. I'm 82 and I've had a stroke. And I don't always talk like I want to.
No, Evelyn, it's quite all right. It's impressive to see that you have a good grasp on what's going on with your car. I talk to ladies half your age that don't even know if it has a security system.
I know what I don't know.
Well, and that's important as well, don't you think?
Yeah.
All right.
And I have a 69 Volkswagen bus.
Oh.
I had it for 39 and a half years ago and it got hit.
Yeah.
So I had to buy this Honda.
Okay.
So, I had to buy a car. I never bought a car before my husband died. So,
okay.
Years ago.
So. Well, Evelyn, when that happens, your garage is more than happy to be involved with that, providing that you ask them, because I know that we help divorcees and widow ladies, and we help ladies that are just simply single when they want to buy a car, and all of us know the process. So if it ever happens to you again, it's okay to ask your shop, can you help me? Most of us don't charge for that. So, let's narrow down what kind of car you want. Let's look at the price range. Let's run that through a search engine to see how many of those cars are available in this particular city. You go look at them and narrow it down to two, and then we'll bring them in and we'll do a check over and we'll let you know which one's the best. And if you want us to, we'll help you negotiate the price. That's kind of how it works. So if that happens to you, then give me a call and I'll help find somebody that will help you in the area. But I'm sure Kurtz would if that were the opportunity. Thank you, Evelyn. Thank you very much. You betcha. Dan, you're up. Dan, number one. We have two of them. So, Dan, number one, you're up. How can I help you?
Hello. Well, that's a tough call to follow.
That's okay.
Hey, on a 2004 Jeep, okay to downshift it on my own. I kind of do it for fun to help braking.
No, of course you can. Absolutely, of course you can. I'm sure that as you downshift, you know where you don't downshift anymore. So you know that when you're downshifting from 60 miles an hour and you're coming off the ramp or you're coming onto the ramp and you downshift, there's going to come a time you can't put it in the first gear at 45 miles an hour. So, yes, you can do that. There's no harm in that. And I've never seen any transmission guy tell me that this transmission failed because they downshift. So now let me ask you a question. Do you have a button at the end of your shifter?
Yeah.
Okay, that's first, right? That's the button you push first.
Well, I'm doing about 40 in the city. I just go drop in the second.
Okay, all right. Because yeah, and now on your Prindle, does it say 1, 2, 3, and OD?
Drive 2-1. It has an overdrive.
Okay, all right. Well, you start an overdrive, you kick off overdrive, then you pull it down to the next one, which is typically 2 or 3, and then you pull it down again. But to answer your question bluntly, there's nothing that's going to happen. Other than the fact you're going to slow down with no brake lights, so if the person behind you happens to be on their phone, and all of a sudden you drop 10 miles an hour without brake lights, he's likely to end, he or she is likely to end up in your trunk.
Understood.
So, all righty. Yeah.
One other on your on our 77 Dodge Power Wagon.
Okay.
Thanks for that tip of driving it in the city locked in or a highway. That's good. Why does the limited slip front end want to pull, you know, want to go straight?
Yeah, the limited slip front end does want to go straight, but it has every ability to make a tight turn right or left.
Correct. It just wants to whip straight. Why did they do that?
What do you mean it just wants to go straight?
Well, I'm in the turn, and if I was let go of the steering wheel, it just wants to go, you know, it wants to go back to going straight.
Okay, okay. That's called return to center, okay? So I know exactly what you're talking about. One finger steering, you roll the steering wheel to the right. Halfway through your turn, you let go, and it goes straight. That is a derivative of the caster setting on the front end, which you don't have. So because you don't have a caster setting, most other cars from 0 to 6 degrees caster, you don't have a caster setting, then you're at 0. And so that return to center is absolutely normal. The cost to dial in some caster on that differential would be horrendous. So just leave it the way it is and know that there's nothing wrong with it. Okay?
Sure, I'm taking good care of it.
All righty. Well, thank you. Thank you
you're
very
welcome.
Much. You bet. Dan, number 2, you're up, buddy. How can we help you?
Got a big question for you. Do they still make retread tires?
V-tread tires.
Oh, retread, you know?
Oh, they do in the trucks, the heavy trucks, but no, not in the cars. I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, I just wonder, because I've been seeing a lot of, you know, trash tires on the street. I was wondering if that's a retread.
No, you mean you're seeing the treads on the roadway.
Yeah, they're coming off cars.
Yeah, that's called the gator, right? The tread.
Yeah.
Every single one of those has got to a point where it overheated the tire, and then the tire came apart, and the tire is made up of two. It's a carcass, a casing, and then the tread. And the tread is typically glued on to the casing. So when you end up throwing the tread off of it, it was underinflated, it had a nail in it, and you didn't pay attention to the air pressure, you overheated it with a load or something like that. During the summertime, between here and Payson and you know, Phoenix and Payson and Phoenix and Flagstaff, they're all over the road. And there's times you just come up over a hill and there's one right in front of you. So it has everything to do with care of your tires, but it has nothing to do with retreads.
Yeah, I just wonder if they still had that around.
No,
just on trucks.
Just on big trucks, yeah. But no, you can't buy, I'm not aware, and I've not seen anybody with a retread in the last 20 years.
Yeah, I remember in the 60s and early 70s, they were advertised on TV, get your tires retreaded.
Yeah, the standards are a little higher now, and the big trucks. Well, and not only that, Dan. There's tires out there that are $39, $49, and $59, and so when you start looking at tires that are that cheap, and that's some of the smaller ones. Even what is a 225 or 215/15. Cheap.
Yeah, cheap. I mean, 40, 50 bucks.
Okay. So when you have brand new tires of a name that you might have remembered.
2 minutes.
For $55 or $60, then that's a lot better than the tree treads. Well, thank you very much
okay,
for bringing
thanks.
That up. You betcha. Bruce, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark, I got a couple questions about some service on my. I have a 2011 2500 HD with Duramax diesel.
Okay.
And I was kind of went through my service records from the dealer and found out they did a coolant change in June of 14 at 15,000 miles, and they just did one June of this year with 30,000 miles. And I'm wondering, is that was that a necessary coolant change they did on that?
What does your manual say?
I don't know. It's per their, I guess it's per the annual or per the RPM schedule that they have for that truck.
Okay.
Based on
what year is it?
11.
It's 11. Let me tell you something. This happens all the time. Right now, their cars are made so good that there's a lot of people starving to death. There's a lot of technicians that don't have a full day's worth of work. There's lots going on right now. You have, what's the orange coolant? Dex?
Dex Cool.
You have Dex Cool in there, and if I'm not mistaken, if you look at your manual, what are you guessing on the Dex
60?
Cool?
60?
I'm guessing 100.
Yeah.
On an 11, 100. So if you're at 60 or 100, what's the mileage now?
30,000.
Okay.
He's done twice in 30.
I know. That is just bad. That is just that there is nothing that they took care of you. That's the difference. Your shop has to take care of you. The shop can't just bend you over and pull your wallet out and take all your money. The service writer's supposed to protect you from the technician. But of course, if they're both commissioned, then all of a sudden they go together and they tell you, oh, you need a cooling system flush. They don't tell you, we did one a year ago. They don't tell you that this is a 60K service in your owner's manual. But everybody, from the franchise shops to the dealerships to the independent shops and all those transmission shops that are starting to do brake work and all those transmission shops that are starting to do heavy line work and all those transmission shops that have all of a sudden become air conditioning experts, all those guys have the same philosophy. So I think what I would do is in a nice way, I would ask for a meeting with the service manager, and I would have three pieces of paper. I'd have work order one, work order two, and a copy of what your manual says.
Okay.
And I would sit in front of him, and I'd say, I'm not going to ask you, I'm not going to take more than 10 minutes of your time. I'm going to leave this with you. Here's work order one, here's work order two, and here's my owner's manual. Why don't you give me a call and let me know how we can fix this, because I'm more than just a little wound up about this. I had hoped I could hold you to a standard that we look at. And if he says, oh, in Arizona, we don't pay attention to the book, then I don't have anything nice to say.
Okay.
That book is written for every single one of the 50 states, and Minnesota in the summertime looks at that book, and Arizona looks at that book, and Death Valley looks at that book. Everybody looks at that book. That book doesn't just say everybody but Arizona.
Right.
And there is no benefit to changing that Dex Cool early. That deck, your motor's not going to love you any more today than it did yesterday.
Okay.
All righty.
I had another quick question. I heard your discussion on synthetic oil.
Uh-huh.
And with this diesel, can they handle synthetic oil?
Oh, yeah.
I have an 8 I run synthetic. He has a 12 that runs synthetic. My sister has a 10 that we all run synthetic.
So
really?
You're 540, and I want to tell you something.
Matter of fact, if you came into my shop, I would recommend that you went to 540.
Now, the conventional is a 1540, and the semi-synthetic or conventional is a 1540,
yes.
And then the synthetic is a 540.
Right.
And you'll get better fuel economy, and your Duramax can handle 540 with no problem whatsoever. So, all right, thank you very much. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Mark Salem, Alan Salem sitting here next to me. My grandson, Mark Salem, sitting to my left. You got the three Salem boys right here helping you out with any kind of problem that you need. Oh, you want me to turn off the speakers? My grandson's helping me run the board, and he's telling me the speakers are on, so there's an echo. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
What do you said? What?
There's the speakers are on.
Okay.
And you told me to tell them if you were off because you kept making mistakes, like you always do.
Your dad's bugging me.
Yeah.
That's why your dad's making comments in my ear that he should just shut up, and then that I wouldn't be, I could focus on the customers.
No surprise.
No surprise. Thank you very much. All righty, your mic is dead. Okay, 1122, let me tell you real quick about Action Auto Repair. I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom, I think I've known him from the late 70s to the early 80s. He started his own repair business in 1983. He's in the northwest corner of Deer Valley and I-17. Would you get your feet off my desk?
What are you talking about?
That.
I took a shower this morning.
Yeah, well, you could have fooled me. Nevertheless, Action Auto Repair, family-owned and operated. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians, and he knows the difference between right and wrong. And I doubt very seriously he's going to sell you two coolant flushes a year apart, when in reality the coolant that you have in there is good for 3 or 4 or even 5 years. So Action Auto Repair, good guy right there. Roy, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Yeah, I've got a 99 Ford Explorer, and it's the original air conditioning. And when I'm driving, well, I have two job sites, and I drive between them.
Okay.
And let's say I jump in the vehicle, start up, and they're 30 miles apart, and so I start driving, and the air conditioning's working good, nice and cool. And I get probably 10 miles into the drive, and then the AC starts blowing warm,
okay.
So the compressor's shut down, and then all of a sudden it starts blowing cold again, you know, and then it shuts down, and then it won't turn back to cold, so then I turn the fan off and give it like a minute or two and turn it back to on, and it starts blowing cold again, and then it will probably blow cold for the rest of the drive. It periodically goes on and off like this,
okay,
all the time.
Let us ask you some questions. So the blower fan that blows air conditioning into the cab of the car is not intermittent. It'll do whatever you ask it to do.
Correct, yeah. It can go from high to low and works fine.
Okay, so it's not intermittent. That's a key word. The blower is not intermittent.
No.
So, all right, you have a high-pressure switch and a low-pressure switch that's probably shutting the system down. The high-pressure switch would typically occur in stop-and-go driving, slow-speed driving, where we don't have a lot of air across the radiator and the condenser. So the high side will come up, and then the high-pressure switch will kick the compressor off to save it from being damaged. If that's the case, and it's a high-pressure problem, then when you get on the freeway, there it never happens, because you're moving so fast through the air that we've got a huge volume of air going through the grill and over the radiator and the condenser. So the high-pressure switch, you need to determine whether this is an in-city driving issue or not, or if it's a highway issue or not. Now, to complicate matters even more, you have a low-pressure switch. What fan speed do you normally run it in?
Probably number 3.
Okay. Are you on
almost the highest it can go.
Okay. Recirculatory or normal, or what are your controls at?
I have it set at maximum AC.
Okay. A lot of water when you park it?
Condensation?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, let's take it off maximum, and let's go to normal or outside air. And let's run a little warmer air over the evaporator. Because you have a lot of water, of course, it is a humid. We've had some humid days. So the humidity is going to cause a lot of water. But it also could very well be that you're freezing up the evaporator, so it's got ice on it. When you park it, then the ice quickly melts, and it goes through the evaporator drain onto the ground.
But he said that the it blows hot. The volume of air doesn't change.
Okay.
The volume of air would if it was freezing up, it would change.
Not necessarily, because we've seen it where we drop a camera inside there,
yeah,
and only half the evaporator's frozen. So we've seen it before where half the evaporator or a third of the evaporator is frozen. Now, here's the problem. When we freeze up a third of the evaporator, we stop the internal flow to some extent.
Right.
So we're not really able to flow through the evaporator, because the Freon that comes into the evaporator is real cold. So there's a fan behind it. So the fan blows air across the evaporator, and it blows it into your face. So if it freezes up, now, if it freezes up, almost always it's low on refrigerant. Almost always. When was the last time you had it serviced?
Oh, years.
Okay.
Ago. I had my own Freon, throughout the years.
Okay. Well, let me explain what we have now real quick. We have a piece of equipment that we actually hook up to your car, and we suck all your Freon out. We clean it. We remove the water and the moisture. Well, water is moisture. Water, moisture, and any trash. We weigh it. Then we look at the sticker on your car, and it says that you hold 3.1 pounds. And we look at the machine, and it says I only have 2.1 pounds. So a pound is 16 ounces, not a 12-ounce can, not a 10-ounce can, not an 8-ounce can. A pound is 16 ounces. People get that mixed up. They have a 3-pound system, so they put three cans in, but those cans are 12 ounces, not 16 ounces. So the machine says, hey, we need another 16 ounces in this. So we put your refrigerant back in. So you don't lose the refrigerant that you had. We just charge you a fee for the service and for 1 pound of refrigerant.
2 minutes.
That's as close as we've ever had to a dipstick in an air conditioning system, we, my industry, and my whole life. And I've been in this business 37 years. This piece of equipment not only has made me money, but it's made me a hero more than any other piece of equipment I had. Remember the guy with the Volvo? Nobody could fix his Volvo. He had no idea how come it wouldn't blow cold air. We did exactly what I talked about. The guy came back, chased me around the front counter trying to hug me. So it's you need to have somebody do that. Do you remember what the price is on that?
The service is $85
plus the Freon.
Plus the Freon and the dye.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, dye or whatever, yeah.
But he hasn't had it serviced in a couple years, so there's really no need for dye.
No. I mean, well, it depends on how low it is.
Right.
But and then usually we recommend Schrader's.
Okay.
You know, Schrader's, which are, you know, 10 bucks a piece or whatever.
Okay. So those are the kinds of things. And you can check the Schrader valves yourself. Just put a bunch of spit in both of them and see if you got bubbling out. But keep in mind that when the system is dead, static, not doing anything, you're going to have about 60 pounds in each side. When it's running, you'll have 30 pounds on the low side, and you can have 200 or 300 on the high side. So there's a big difference when it's running and when the key's in your pocket. And checking the Schrader's, it's more important to check the Schrader's when it's actually running, so the high side's 200 or 300 pounds and the low side's at 30. Then you can check the low side when the key's in your pocket, because that's going to be 60 or 70. So hopefully that makes sense. John and Dick, you guys stay right there, and we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to give you guys a hand. Thompson's Auto Repair is over in Mesa, and he's off of Main, just east of Stapley, been around since 1970. Brian and Thelma are exactly the kind of people you want to do business with. They're the second generation Thompsons, and they do know how to work on cars, and they treat their customers very fair. He's also the only guy in Mesa I like. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Oh, I think we're going to take the callers first because they've been holding a long time. Roy? No, Roy we did. Joan?
John.
I can't tell my H's from my A's. John, how are you? What can we do for you?
I'm good, Mark. I've got a friend that's got a couple. He's had a couple of different Toyota pickups. He currently has a Tacoma, and he had the same problem with a Tundra. When he opens the driver's door to get out, if he doesn't open it fully and block it, it'll come back and about, you know, amputate his leg.
Ooh.
He says he's had it on more than one vehicle. Does that sound like something you guys have ever heard of?
No, I can speak for me. I've never had anybody ever say anything like, is it possible that he's opening the door with vengeance and the door reaches its maximum opening but then springs back at him?
No, we talked about that.
Okay.
And he's a fairly sharp guy.
Okay.
So he has to hold it and be very careful when he exits, because if you just open it like a normal person would, it'll come right back on you.
Okay. Well, on American cars, there's this cam with three indentations. And when you open the door, the pin falls into the first one, the second one, then the third one, and that's what keeps the door open. I'm not familiar with what a Toyota is going to look like, but it's going to have something that's similar to that. And I think on a Toyota, if you'll look about middle between the upper and the lower door mount, you're going to see kind of a flat bar that goes into the door. And I'm not quite sure at the end of that bar. I guess the question would be this. Does the passenger side do the same thing? And if the passenger side does exactly the same thing, I don't know where I would start other than taking the door panels apart. But if the passenger side doesn't do the same thing, And depending on the miles on the truck, then I think you'd take the door panel off the driver's side and see what the heck's going on. But that's the only thing I can think of.
Well, that makes sense. I told him if anybody would have seen it, you guys would have.
Yeah, we haven't. I mean, since 1979, I don't remember anybody ever saying that the door comes back at me, I think is what you're saying. When I open it,
yeah.
I don't open it with vengeance. It's almost as if the truck is leaning towards the passenger side in a very steep manner. So when I open the driver's door, it comes back at me real quick. And so
That's exactly what he said. That's how he analyzed it.
Yeah,
it seemed like it was what it was doing.
Well, and then one other thing too is have him stop by a body shop. Those guys have dealt with stuff I haven't. So just have him stop by a body shop that maybe is signed up with his automotive insurance, because he walks up and he hands him his, you know, Farm Bureau or his State Farm or his farmer's card and just say, I know you're a designated repair shop. Can you look at this for me? And typically they'll help you out that way. All right, John. Thank you very much, buddy. Thank you. Dick, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Mark, I've got a 2012 Ford Fusion. And one of the front lights has gone out. It's not the headlight. It's a little round clear light that's below the headlight.
Okay.
On the outside. I went to a parts place, bought a bulb. A lot of times they'll put them in for you, but they told me they couldn't put this one in. I'd have to take it over to my shop or the dealership. So I took it over to this independent shop that I've used for years, and they said, well, we've got to take the bumper off to get this light on. It's going to cost you $125 or so. And I said, well, okay. Then they called a little later, and they said, well, the wires are burnt, so we've got to put in a whole new light holder fixture down there. It's going to be $675 to replace a light bulb. Is that legitimate?
Well, I can't tell you if those two prices are correct, but I can tell you that pulling the front bumper on some cars to get to the lights is something that we're seeing more and more.
Frequently.
We're having to pull the front bumper for a lot of things. We pull the front bumper to get the radiator out of it. We pull the front bumper to deal with lights. We pull the front bumper to work on the bottom of the radiator or the air conditioning condenser. So a lot of the things, because they're wrapping the bumpers all the way around the front of the car, and the height has changed dramatically where the bumper itself is 12, 14 inches tall, that makes a difference.
1 minute.
In your case.
How about having to replace the light fixture itself.
Well, what they're saying is the socket is burned. They're saying the socket. So the lamp got hot, and the socket burned up the housing that holds the bulb and holds the socket. So they're saying it comes as a complete assembly. I would offer you the opportunity to just get one that's used.
I would just replace the socket. Just clip the two wires and put a new socket on it.
Well, I doubt if that's going to be available, but that's certainly a place to start.
That's what we typically do, like for the DRLs on Chevy pickups that are always burning out.
Yeah.
We clip them off. We can get just the
socket.
And I'm looking at this here. It's a projection style. It's a projection style beam, so they're using it as a fog light.
Okay.
And yeah.
All right. You've got a couple of different choices. Certainly, you could buy the assembly from a junkyard. And if you have the old one in your hand and they give you one that's burnt like yours is, then you know the difference. But you could do that. You could say, I'm going to stop by and pick up the assembly and I'm going to go shop with it. You could do it on the phone. The question I would have to the junkyard is this. What years does this cover? And he's going to look in his book and he's going to say, Mark, it's actually from 2010 to 2014. All the cars have this same fog light assembly. Perfect. How many of those you got? Well, let me look in my computer. I've got 8. Do you have any right front? Do you have any passenger side ones? Yeah, I have 2 passenger side ones. Okay, how much you want for it? Now, they're not stupid because they know that that's a $600 light. But in reality, they're going to feel pretty bad about charging you $300 for it. But you're going to get the light at more than 50% discount. More than. So I think I would look that. Now, you could also get on the phone and call the Ford Parts Department and say to them, do you have a bulb assembly or a socket assembly for the passenger side fog light? The front passenger side fog light. Can I buy the pigtail, which is the socket with the two wires coming out of it?
And see, I think that's the problem. I don't think it's going to be available from the dealer. I think we're going to have to buy it in the aftermarket.
Okay, and if that's the case, then where would you buy it from?
Well, Jeff has a pigtail book downstairs that's this big that we were looking through the other day. I can get any pigtail.
All right, so Alan is raising his hand. And, Dick, have you got your pencil handy?
Okay.
480-598-1234. And you call him up and you say, hey, I talked to you and you had a book the size of three Bibles. And here's the VIN number and the year of my car. And give him your phone number and he'll look it up for you.
Yep.
Now, okay, and what's his name?
Alan.
Well, Alan, okay.
It depends on whether I'm mad at him. I call him Alan when I like him, but when I'm really mad at him, I use bad words. So I'm going to pass on giving you those. But I also want to say, here's something else. They still have your car, yes?
No, we've got the car back. We didn't have it done.
Okay,
so.
Did you get the old socket? Did you get the old light?
I would assume so.
No, do you have it in the car or do you have it in your hands?
I think it's in the car.
Okay. All right. Okay, well, we'll work on this for you. And if we can find something, we
call
will.
Call me Monday, and I'll get it handled for you.
All right, perfect. We're going to take a quick break. The lines are open, 602-508-0960. So I think I can usually handle three calls between now and the 58 mark. So, again, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. I want to remind you that our show starts at 10. So between 10 and 11, we have lots of slots open, but between 11 and 12, we take lots of calls. So if you want to get in and you have a car problem, you got two ways to handle it. You can show up a little earlier at the show, about 10 o'clock hour, because like I say, we go for 2 hours, or you can email me at mark@salemboysauto.com. mark@salemboysauto.com. Now, the area of my shop, the reason I send people to Scottsdale and to the West Side and to Mesa is because that's what's in your best interest. I'm sending you to shops that I know will take good care of you, and I think it would be real irresponsible of me to try to get everybody to my shop. But I will tell you the areas that are in my geographical area, and you'll see that it's a very small portion with respect to West Tempe, West Chandler, West Gilbert, Ahwatukee, Sun Lakes. So you can kind of see I'm in that southwest quadrant of Tempe. You can come from anywhere if you want to come. You're more than welcome. Call and make an appointment. But my area, again, is Tempe, Chandler, Gilbert, Ahwatukee, Sun Lakes. That's kind of the area. I don't really pull from Mesa. I don't pull from Scottsdale. I have some Phoenix addresses, but most of them are in the Ahwatukee area. So that's kind of, I'm just helping you with that. IMM Auto Services is in the northeast portion of Tempe, and he's been around since 1972. He's one of those guys that has ASE Master Certified Technicians. He works on domestics as well as imports, but he specializes in Swedish, Italian, and Asian vehicles. So Volvo, Saab, Fiat, Alfa Romeos are vehicles that they work on from bumper to bumper, and some of those cars we don't accept because we know they're sophisticated or we don't have the necessary equipment to diagnose them. So they can do your Honda, your Toyota, your Chevy, your Ford, and your Chrysler in your garage. And if you have a Volvo, Saab, Fiat, or Alfa Romeo, they can do those too. Ken, good morning to you. How can we help you today?
Yes, Mark. My daughter has a 1994 Honda Accord, four-cylinder, 65,000 miles on it. We've replaced all the motor mounts. We have a problem for years already with the idle. And it's only at lights, whether you have the air on or not, it idles so low it shakes the car. And once you get going, it's fine. It's just that doggone idle.
Okay, now, but here's how I can save you a lot of diagnostic money. If the air isn't on, is the problem there?
Yes.
So it's both with and without the air.
Correct.
Oh, that throws it into something completely different. That idle on that fuel injection engine, your Honda, there is a process to check the idle, but in fact the computer controls the idle. And turning screws up on the what we call the throttle body is not the thing that you need to do.
Right,
that's not
right.
What you should do. Now, there's usually an idle air control motor, which is this electric motor with a cone on the end of it, and we shut off an air passage, or we open up the air passage to make the idle happen. 65,000 miles, it would be worth having somebody. First of all, you got to find somebody who's done this before. What part of town are you in?
I'm in Glendale.
Okay. I would probably swing over to Kurtz or Action Auto on the I-17.
Okay.
I would do that, and I'm quite sure. And I'll tell you something else. You're in Glendale, but Indian School, Larry Harker's at 38th Avenue in Indian School. I know he could figure this out.
Okay.
But Action and Kurtz Auto Repair up there on the I-17 corridor, they could do that. And I want you to do it this way. The car runs fine. Our problem is this. No matter if the air is on or off when you come to a traffic light, the car feels as though the idle is too low.
Right.
And if my daughter just ever so slightly touches the throttle, then everything smooths out and it's to her liking.
Yeah, that's exactly what she does.
But see, when you give it to us that way, you've just saved yourself a lot of diagnostic money, or otherwise we got to go do that. So when you put that in those kinds of words, and don't be like all the rest of the men that are engineers, they tell us how to fix it and they'll never tell us the symptoms. So they'll come in and tell us, you know, reset the idle, we do, and it doesn't fix it. But they want us to pay for their bad decision. So if you just give him what I told you, that'll save you a lot of money, because he's not going to have to go drive it to determine air on, air off. You're going to tell him it's the same. Okay?
Right. Thank you, Mark.
You betcha, Ken. Bob, you're up next. How can I help you?
I wanted your opinion again. My brother ran into a tree and crashed his car, and the car is only like the Ford Transit. It's only 1 to 2 years old.
Okay.
And the insurance company is wanting to total the vehicle, and they want to give him $16,000 for the vehicle, and he owes $19,000 on it. And I think the repair came in at $13,000, and that was from the dealer.
Okay.
So there I went. I didn't understand this gap issue.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was just wanting your opinion.
Does he
that.
Have gap insurance or not?
No.
Okay. That means that his gap insurance would pay the difference between the 16 and the 19.
Right. But he doesn't.
Okay. Just because they said 16 doesn't mean it's going to be 16. He has a right to go out and get other experts and other opinions.
Right.
You talking about the payoff?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I want you, have you got your pencil handy?
No, I don't, but I can get it.
All right, get your pencil handy, because I think I'm going to help you. There's a well-respected friend of mine that does this for a living. And he's very good at it, but he's also very capable of saying to you, Bob, they're giving you what it's worth, and they're giving you a fair price. Or he'll say, Bob, if you would let me, I'll write a new sheet on it, and then let's present them with that and see if we can get a little closer. What you don't want to do is buy that back and fix it, because it's going to come with a salvage title. That's a bad deal.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the airbags didn't go off on this thing.
Well, okay. Maybe we get another. Where do you live? Are you in North Phoenix?
He's in Scottsdale.
Okay. I don't really have a paint and body shop in Scottsdale that...
what about Phoenix Body Works?
Well, that's the perfect place. I mean, Greg over there he's a smart son of a gun. He's a no BS guy. He knows what he's talking about. He has the respect of insurance companies, all that kind of stuff. Is it drivable by chance?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
All right. You'll have a tow bill, but certainly you could take it over to Phoenix Body Works, or you could say to Greg, is it possible for you to come and look at it real quick. Now, I also have another shop in Scottsdale, Rain Tree, at Hayden and Rain Tree. That's owned by...
That's like right down the road.
Yeah, Rain Tree Auto Body. I would get him involved.
Yeah, but they're not... Are they Auto Body?
Well, see, this is about Rain Tree that most people don't know. They have the relationship with the Audi, the Mercedes-Benz, and the Porsche dealers to do all their paint and body work. So these guys are a little extra special, because they only work on the real expensive stuff. But Andy Val and his sons run the place, and I know that they would look at it for you. And if it's close by, then they would look at it for you.
It's down there at Power or whatever.
Yeah, and then they would give you a good idea. But you got your pencil handy? I want you to call my daughter Andy, A N D I. and ask her for Mike Sheehan's phone number. Mike, S-H-E-E-H-A-N. Mike Sheehan. Mike does that for a living. And he'll go out and look at your truck car for you or the transit van. He'll come up with an amount that he thinks is fair. He'll pass that on to you and your brother. And then you, if it's a number that conflicts with the insurance company, then the insurance company and Mike and you and your, well, not you, but your brother, you guys will all negotiate a happy medium. But don't buy that back. It comes with a salvage title. That's a bad deal.
Yeah,
that's a
bad deal. That. Right.
All righty.
I was just wondering if I could find somebody else that would fix it for a, but see, I think the insurance company don't want to pick up some formula that they say, well, we're not spending more than such a percentage of the vehicle.
They do. That's how it works.
That's right.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that Greg or Andy Val from Raintree wouldn't say, oh, no, I don't want to replace that bumper. I can paint that and make it look nice. I don't think I need to replace this. And besides that, they got way too much time right here. So that's the kind of conversation that can happen. What happens if they drop it down? Somebody says, you know, I'm not going to do that for $16,000. I'll do it for $14,000 or I'll do it for $13,000.
Right.
You know? So you have nothing to lose by involving Andy Val, maybe Greg, and maybe Mike. You can pick one of those three guys and start there. Okay?
And what's Andy's phone number?
Andy Val at Raintree Auto is 480-951-3441. And you're probably going to talk to either Andy or Paul, his son. And you wrote down my daughter's name, Andy.
What's Andy's phone number?
My daughter you're talking about, right?
Yes.
Okay, 480-598-1234. 480-598-1234.
Okay, and that was Andy, and what was the other name? Mark?
Andy is my daughter, and that goes with the...
No, you said Andy at Raintree.
Oh, Andy Val, V-A-L, and his son Paul.
Paul
and Andy are the...
okay.
And obviously his is A-N-D-Y. So, well, good luck to you, Bob.
Okay, thank you.
You betcha.
No one else on hold.
Say that again?
No one else on hold.
Oh, okay. You run across that because you deal in those kinds of wrecks and deal with... I deal with the insurance companies. You deal with the dealers. And so we have a perspective. Both of us have a perspective. The insurance companies, to some extent, are flexible, to some extent. But they're not going to pull a bunch of money out of their pocket to make you happy.
Yeah, well, and I was thinking with this guy, most of the time people want they want extra money to get their car totaled, where this guy wants a lower bid not to total the car.
Yeah, but he said something that was so important to me. The airbags didn't deploy.
No, I know.
That indicates that this crash was well underneath any kind of threshold to toss the bags.
Yeah, but still, you're going to have that mark on the Carfax. If it were me,
yeah,
I'd go out there and accidentally, you know, knock the rearview mirror off.
No, stop that.
No, I know.
But if it were you, would you come out of pocket $3,000? That's what they're asking him to do.
No, I would negotiate, but I would not want it repaired, in my opinion.
And
I wouldn't.
I made that clear to him. But he's got a $3,000 flip here.
Right,
so
right.
I'm thinking if we can work out somebody that will bring it down just a little bit and make it more favorable.
1 minute.
And maybe cut a corner or two, but at least there's not $4,000 worth of airbags that have to go back into that thing.
Right.
So, yeah, anyway. All right, my email address, mark@marksalem.com. You can send me an email. If you leave me a phone number, I like to call you back. And I always call from a blocked line. So if you get one, you run a risk of it being somebody that's an idiot, or it could very well be this idiot, Mark Salem. But I'll always identify myself right at the beginning. I'll say, Jim, you sent Mark Salem an email, and my name is Mark Salem. Have you got a minute to talk to me? And I usually have more questions that I want answered, and usually that's better. Don't forget, car repair has to do with dialogue. It has to do with your symptoms, and me asking you questions, just like we demonstrated on the show today. Does the air conditioning work when you're at highway speeds or city speeds? Because it makes a difference. That's the kind of dialogue that needs to take place. Mark@marksalem.com. I'll see you next Saturday, 10 o'clock.